When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now, why is it doing that weird flashing?
I wonder if that means you're... Yell. Do we just try yelling?
Ah!
It means you're overmodulating,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
the yell was quite kind of sheep-like.
Well, we often have sort of sheep competitions in my castle. Sheep impression competitions.
Are you usually the winner?
No. My wife does a good sheep noise.
Did you just walk back with a Christmas tree over your shoulder this morning?
Yes, we walked back with a Christmas tree. It's just from the local school, so.
But how far?
10 minutes.
Did you feel very manly?
No, because Justine and I were both carrying it.
Oh, I see.
Are you a big tree guy?
Yes, but I gave up some years ago on trying to carry it due to my weakness. And I felt that when Sarah and I did it together, it took on a Laurel and Hardy component to it. So I just get them to bring it round now. We go and pick one out and then get them to drop it off later that same day.
It's not the tallest tree in the world. It's a 5 foot, I think. So,
didn't Justine improvise last year?
We did a sort of... That's right. Now you're remembering. What was it? It was a sort of... A kind of installation.
It was like the Blue Peter Advent Calendar.
It was made with twigs or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah. Hey, did I tell you Gene won a Blue Peter badge?
No.
He made a tea light for Diwali and then sent it in. And a few days later got a letter from the editor and his picture was up. You could see it on the wall on the telly. So now we can get into all kinds of attractions for free, or at least he can.
That's so impressive.
Yeah, I know. I never had a Blue Peter badge.
Was he pleased?
Yeah, he was delighted with it. Yeah,
that is quite amazing. Now I wonder whether the cop talks are going to get a Blue Peter badge. He said, making a sort of rather
they have a
dodgy segue.
They have a green Blue Peter badge, an eco badge. So maybe you could get awarded with one of those. So you got back from COP late Tuesday?
I got back from COP. Late Tuesday, that's correct.
And from the conversation we had last week, it seemed to me like you were feeling encouraged that stuff was happening, if not a little disheartened at the speed at which things happen.
I sort of feel like we're making more progress than some people might have predicted a decade ago, and far too little progress for what is required. But I thought I wanted to talk to you about this argument that's going to play out in the next few days about fossil fuels.
Mm.
Are you sort of broadly aware of this?
Is it to do with how much carbon capture is part
Yes,
of
you are well informed. But you know what is so interesting about this? It's made me think quite a lot. So there's this argument going on that there's never been... The COP has never had language on fossil fuel phase-out, on the phase-out of fossil fuels. And, just to give you a sense of this, according to the UN... we know that the burning of fossil fuels is the largest single contributor to greenhouse gas emissions by a long distance. This is the fundamental issue that we face. And according to the according to the UN, countries are currently planning double the fossil fuel production than that is consistent with 1.5 degrees. So we're kind of way off where we need to be. And there's a very good report from the Energy Transitions Commission, which came out recently, which is a group of businesses and civil society and others, but it's led by a guy called Adair Turner, Lord Turner, who was the chair of the Climate Change Committee in the UK. And that said that coal use needed to fall by 80 to 85% by 2050, gas use by 55 to 70%, and oil use by 75 to 95%. So that gives you to be consistent with 1.5 degrees. So that gives you a sense of the sort of scale of what is required.
Mm.
And there's never been language in the COP about what happens to fossil fuels, about what should happen to fossil fuels. There has been language about coal. Do you remember 2 years ago at COP26, there was language about a phase out of coal use, and then at the last minute it got changed, I think after objections from India and China, to phase down, and Alok yes. Sharma got very emotional at the end of it. And so there has been language about coal, but not about fossil fuels. And so the sort of raging argument is this. Now, I'll come on to the abatement thing in a minute, but I'll tell you there's something interesting that has sort of occurred to me about this, which is most people think of these COPs as, well, the popular view of these COPs is, what do they achieve anyway? And we can sort of argue about that, and I've said that they're a good forcing mechanism and all that. But I suppose what's interesting is it's quite bitterly contested, this question of the language that should be used. But that tells you, well, A, it's bitterly contested, but B, doesn't that also tell you something quite interesting, which is that even though this is not a legally binding process, in other words, a government can't be sort of taken to court if it doesn't abide by what the COP says, people do care about the outcomes a lot.
Yes, because otherwise they'd be signing up to anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, then we can just sign up to any old nonsense, and then, you know, who cares? I mean, it's quite interesting, that, isn't it? And it sort of made me, as I've been talking about this with you, I've been thinking, well, it does say something that countries really... And somebody was saying to me yesterday, well, maybe it's about a signal to investors. I think it is partly that. But I think countries obviously feel, well, look, if the world agrees on this, we're going to face a lot of pressure.
Yeah, there's something about it, isn't it? It's like almost like holding each other to account in the way that a support group does.
Yeah. It's also, obviously, they will feel constrained by the... I think it's more that countries will feel, once there's this agreement... Well, I think it does suggest that countries will feel that once there is an agreement to wording, they're sort of bound in.
But that's so
even though they're not, even though they're not legally bound in.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it? Because, you know, we've got used to the myth about, or not the myth, but the perception of politics being that politicians sign up to and make all kinds of promises which they don't intend to keep. But obviously in this context, Now, then I was wondering, well, is it just the dynamic of these negotiations that lots of people are paid to be negotiators and so on and want to get the best for their countries? And in a sense, the sort of meta picture is that they're so in the weeds, they just think, well, we've got our own country's interests. Anyway, so there you are. But now, then there is this question about whether it should be unabated, phase out of unabated fossil fuels. Or that's the sort of new wording that has entered the debate. And that really says that carbon capture and other similar technologies can sort of can get you out of the problem of fossil fuels, or can play a role.
Will you now explain the difference between abated and unabated for us?
Well, unabated is when you just burn the fossil fuels, and abated is when you capture the carbon dioxide that comes from the use of the fossil fuels, and, you know, it doesn't go into the atmosphere, the carbon capture.
It's whether you use the fossil fuels and then try to mitigate it, or whether you don't use it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Abated means you're using the fossil fuels, but you're capturing the carbon. and unabated means you're just using the fossil fuels.
And from conversations we've had on the podcast, it seems to me that capturing the carbon is okay short term, but you're kicking the problem down the road, right?
I think less kicking the problem down the road is, I think carbon capture can well, this is controversial, but the people I speak to think that carbon capture can definitely play a role and definitely has a role, because there are technologies that are going to find it really hard to get off fossil fuels where you are going to need a carbon capture solution. There are processes like cement making, for example.
I could live without it.
But if you use carbon capture, as some in the fossil fuel industry to do, to say we can just carry on with business as usual and it will all be fine, that's what, if you look at this energy transitions report, they say actually, crucially, the report dispels the notion that CCUS, so carbon capture, utilization, storage, and carbon removals, which is another similar technology, justify business as usual for fossil fuel production. To limit global warming to 1.5 degrees, 65% of oil and gas reserves and 90% of coal reserves must remain untapped. So do you see what I mean? It's got a role, and I think I personally think it is important to think it has a role, and actually the Britain is well placed to have a role through the North Sea and so on. But you can't use it to justify just business as usual on fossil fuels, and so that is where the whole debate is. And remember from last week, the context is we're way behind where we need to be. But so, look, I don't know. We're speaking on Sunday. I don't know what the outcome will be from COP28. It seems like there will be some, from what people have said to me, there will be some kind of language on fossil fuels. But for countries like Saudi Arabia and others, that is quite very controversial. Even for a country like China, it seemed controversial, although apparently China, from what I heard yesterday, was more open to this. But I suppose then going back to where I originally started, the question is whether you end up with language that is just all things to all people. If it says a phase down of unabated fossil fuels, for example, well, that is maybe something, because it's like they've never said it before, but it could just be interpreted to a massive number of interpretations, presumably.
Phase down sounds a bit woolly.
Yeah, well, that's where we end up with coal. And I mean, somebody I really respect who is the head of the International Energy Agency, his name's Fatih Birol from Turkey, he was saying to me at COP, look, you really need to say you should not go into the phase down, phase out. Sorry, you should not go into the unabated, abated business. You should just be saying you need to phase out the use of fossil fuels consistent with 1.5 degrees. So in other words, it's sort of, you know, that allows for a role for carbon capture, but it doesn't get you into getting yourself off the hook, because your benchmark is not abated, unabated, this, that, and the other, but it's sort of 1.5. So look, that is I mean, it does make me think, as I'm saying this to you, you know, the COP process is very, what's the right word, questioned as to whether it's of any use at all. But it does make me think these discussions wouldn't be going on if there wasn't a COP.
Yeah.
Countries will be just noodling on with it.
Yeah, as we said at the beginning, it does seem to put this peer pressure on.
Peer pressure, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a sort of like, what did you say? It's like Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah. Or Weight Watchers.
Except it's not anonymous. But yes. So we shall see. We shall await. That's my, you know how in the Grand National you say the pin stickers guide to the Grand National. That's my pin stickers guide to the COP outcome.
And wasn't there a thing with last year's COP where it was supposed to end and then it just kept going? And
they always go into extra time. The referee always puts up a thing saying plus 2 days, you know. I don't think any COP has ever finished on time.
I just worry about the people working at the conference centre. They probably have to get the boat show in the next day or Crufts or something.
Well, I think there was a thing in Glasgow where there was something big other event happening and you didn't really want Crufts or whatever it was to sort of, you know, end up kind of running into the COP. So there we are. And next year it's going to be in Baku.
Aha! That was a big reveal.
That's a big reveal.
So
it's like the Eurovision Song Contest.
Did they win this year's Cup?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Wow. Maybe you're right. Maybe there should be a sort of global phone-in to see who, you know, where, although then you'd favour large countries.
No, because it doesn't favour large countries in Eurovision, does it?
Coppervision.
Yes. So whichever country does best on its climate pledges that it gets to host next year's.
This is good. I think you know, with that eye for international diplomacy that is well known, I think you might have hit on something. I sort of can picture it now. Graham, should we see if Graham Norton's available?
Yeah,
so after next
to make snarky remarks.
I mean, it's going to be in Brazil, so I don't want to not have it in Brazil. But you know, you think we could have Coppervision as an idea for the future?
Yeah. Put that in the suggestions box.
So Rishi Sunak would have to come on stage, do 1 minute of performance, and every country does a performance, and then you have a sort of jury vote and a people's vote.
Absolutely, this is exactly how I think.
Honestly,
and then they should go round all the countries.
You know, I don't know much about these things, but do you think that would be an attractive thing to have on mainstream television?
I think it would increase public engagement in COP. I mean, maybe not by that much, but
maybe I should take it under advisement. But you think it might? I don't think I'll put it in the manifesto, Jeff. If that's all
well,
right.
Speaking of which, I sent you what I thought was an excellent policy idea this week, and it went unacknowledged.
I thought we'd given ourselves permission to have no acknowledgements.
But this wasn't the thing for the podcast. This was me suggesting something.
Oh,
for your manifesto. Yeah. So my policy idea was all toilets should be public toilets except those in private residences.
So what that, in other words, you don't have to go and ask when you go into a restaurant, when you're desperate and you're
yes.
passing by a restaurant or a
yes.
pub or something.
Yes.
Hotels.
Yes, because I don't like the awkwardness of that. And then sometimes I don't want to do it and then I go in and I'm trying to look confident and that doesn't come easily to me. And you're trying to figure out where the toilet. I don't want any of that and I don't want to have the asking. I think that would be a vote winner.
I'll pass it on. You're quite obsessed with these issues. I sort of vaguely, these kind of rings vague bells. I mean.
Yes, but these are the issues that affect real lives.
It's true. Now, did this come up because you had that particular experience?
Yeah, it was having to go in somewhere and ask to use the toilet. And I just feel like I'm Oliver Twist with this begging bowl.
But do you not? So I think, and okay, this is me, so maybe they wouldn't be less likely to refuse me because maybe they think I'm Rishi Sunak. People are generally quite okay about it, aren't they? It's very rare if people say, no, you can't use the toilet.
It has happened, or often there'll be a sign up on the door saying, toilets are for customer use only, don't even think
yeah.
about asking. I find
yeah.
having a kid with me, you know, if I need the toilet, I will usually, if I'm with Gene, I'll pretend it's for him, so they don't ask any questions.
Do we have any data on that public toilets have presumably gone down massively?
They must have done, right?
Yeah.
I always thought those automatic toilets were going to be the toilets of the future.
I know they were sort of a passing fad, really, weren't they?
I think people were afraid they were going to get stuck inside of one when it went into its cleaning routine.
Yeah, that was the whole thing, wasn't it?
But I'm not just limiting this to pubs and restaurants. I think office blocks as well.
Well, that's interesting. See, maybe it made for more sociable world.
Definitely.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Well, it's just you're the font of good ideas, mainly about toilets.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Now, what else have you got for us?
I was going to talk to you. You've talked about fossil fuels. I was going to just zone in on fossils.
Fossils.
This was on Sky News. Scientists have discovered a rare dinosaur fossil, which they believe may shed new light on the eating habits of a close relative of the T-Rex. This is a dinosaur called the Gorgosaurus. It was a smaller cousin. It walked the earth several million years earlier than the T-Rex. And they've discovered a juvenile Gorgosaurus fossil. And inside its stomach were the remains of two baby dinosaurs. 75 million years old this thing is. And they could see that it had eaten the hind limbs.
Quite extraordinary.
Yeah, they could even spot like toe bones protruding.
Where was it found?
From the rib cage.
Where was it found?
Canada. And that made me think that's something you only ever really see in cartoons, isn't it? The shape of something you've eaten inside your belly.
I mean, it's quite extraordinary. But I also, your sort of fossil thing kind of then piqued my interest in the fossil situation. And there's an really interesting BBC story about a fossil that is going to feature on David Attenborough's
Oh, yeah, is it going to be on, over the new year?
And it's like a massive dinosaur that... colossal sea monster, plesiosaur discovery, huge sea monster emerged from Dorset Cliffs. The skull of a colossal sea monster has been extracted from the cliffs of Dorset's Jurassic coast. It belongs to a plesiosaur, a ferocious marine reptile that terrorized the oceans about 150 million years ago. This thing is absolutely enormous.
It's amazing. It's like a big head and its mouth is closed, which I think typically when they find these things, it isn't. So they've got a much better idea of what its jaw looked like.
I mean, it's quite scary, isn't it?
Mm.
Can I just ask you this question? Do we know why the dinosaurs died out? Was it a meteor?
That's one of the theories, isn't it?
But then how did they kill... What about the ones in the oceans? Were they not protected?
Maybe the water got hot. I don't know, actually. I've not thought about the swimming ones. Because there are some things in the ocean that have been there for a long, long time, like coelacanths. I know this from watching Octonauts.
Oh, we love the Octonauts. This is extraordinary. How this fossil skull was recovered is extraordinary. It started with a chance find during a stroll along a beach near Kimmeridge Bay on southern England's famous World Heritage Jurassic Coast. Steve Etch's friend and fellow fossil enthusiast, Phil Jacobs, came across the tip of the snout of the plesiosaur lying in the shingle. Too heavy to carry, he went to fetch Steve and the pair rigged a makeshift stretcher to take the fossil fragment to safety. It's amazing. I'd love to have been a paleontologist or an archaeologist.
It's still time. You can go to night school.
Don't you think it would be really exciting?
Yeah. Have you ever been to that Jurassic coast? I wouldn't even know what I was looking for.
I was about to say not knowingly, I think.
Mm.
Don't you think there's something sort of quite magical about it?
Yes. I don't know if I would like to be discovered as a fossil millions of years into the future.
I don't think you'd be kind of very conscious of it, though.
No, but I think it'd be embarrassing to, like, for this this Gorgosaurus, like, everybody knowing what you've been eating. It's none of their business.
I mean, it's just I do think being an archaeologist or a paleontologist would be quite an extraordinary experience.
Have you ever had a go on a metal detector?
Probably, but...
Does that hold any appeal for you?
Well, maybe. You think about a Christmas present for me. I love the idea that you're sort of discovering something that has just been hidden away for hundreds or thousands of years.
I wonder how easy it is if you go to that Dorset coast.
Yeah, that's what I was
wondering. How easy it is to just happen across a fossil. Or I wonder if you've got to have the eye for it and the...
The smarts.
Yeah.
I think you probably need to have the fossil smarts. Now, should we be asking for listener comments, do you think, Jeff?
Yes, we should. Yeah, we said last week, actually, we'd really really like to hear from you. So you can email us through the old website, cheerfulpodcast.com, and the old email address is reasons@cheerfulpodcast.com. We got this message from Caroline Benton-Marsh, who says, Hi, Ed and Jeff. There's at least one person still listening to the podcast.
Aww.
Thank you, Caroline. This is the real story behind the turkey pardon, a perennial bugbear for NPR's Domenico Montanaro. And Kel Surprise, it's because of capitalism engineered by the turkey lobby. Happy reading. Worth mentioning, too, is that these poor animals are so horrendously bred for maximum breast meat that even once pardoned, they're condemned to a life of discomfort because of their unnatural, unbalanced shape. Womp, womp, better have the nut roast instead. Absolutely, Caroline, I'm with you. So do you want to hear some of this, then?
Yes.
Okay, so this is from the NPR website. So some things apparently never get old, notably the strange tradition of presidential turkey pardons. The tradition of giving presidents turkeys to eat did start in 1947, which is the year I think I had it as. But pardoning them is a more complicated tale. This comes from a tradition that ironically features an American president sanctioning an event sponsored by a lobbying group which advocates the opposite of what actually takes place. It only became a formalised occurrence in the White House in the 1980s, but this dance between the turkey lobby and presidents started in the 40s. Back then, it was a more honest gifting of a bird for the president and his family to eat at Thanksgiving, but death is a hard sell. Realising the awkwardness of the whole situation, John F. Kennedy broke the tradition in 1963. He said, "I think we'll just let this one grow."
It's a JFK thing.
It had a sign around its neck saying, "Good eating, Mr. President." And he just thought, "Oh, I'm going to spare it." And I think that was where that tradition started from.
Amazing. Well, there you go. And we should say, shouldn't we, that we'd like to hear people's views on our chatteroo. I think the sort of news is taking time to travel.
Yes.
I've sent you an idea yesterday, which is that we're going to have for our New Year edition. He's my former teaching assistant, Ben Ansell, Professor Ben Ansell from Oxford University, who gave the Wreath Lectures. And I just thought to myself, oh, my goodness, you know, that is a very amazing thing to be doing, giving the Wreath Lectures.
Isn't it great for people's careers when they stop working with you?
I mean, it's quite remarkable how this takes off. The leaving Ed bonus.
Yes, it's like you're clipping their wings.
Thank you. Like, no turkey metaphors there. Anyway, we're going to talk to Ben Ansell. And I am quite interested. I sent you this link to the Taylor Swift studies at Harvard University.
Yeah, but I just think you've got to be careful, Ed. I mean, what do you want to do with the second chapter of your life? Do you want to be a paleontologist? Do you want to major in Taylor Swift studies?
Professor of Taylor Swift studies.
So tell us some more about this.
So here we are. A Harvard professor prepares to teach a new subject, Taylor Swift. Swift-inspired classes are sweeping colleges across the country. This is from the New York Times. The syllabus is much like what one might expect from an undergraduate English course with texts by William Wordsworth, Willa Cather, and Samuel Taylor Coleridge. But there's one name that might surprise budding scholars, Taylor Swift. In the spring semester, Stephanie Burt, an English professor at Harvard, will teach a new class, Swift, Taylor Swift and Her World. Nearly 300 students have enrolled. The class is part of a wave of academic institutions around the country, including New York University and the University of Texas at Austin. Stanford has also invoked the Swift song All Too Well with a course plan for next year titled All Too Well 10-week version, as opposed to 10-minute version. And Arizona State University offered a psychology class on Miss Swift's work. Professor Burt, they then interview Professor Burt. And basically, she's asked, a Harvard class about Taylor Swift feels ripe for detractors. And she says, this is a course that includes plenty of traditionally admired dead people who've taught in English, been taught for a long time, who I not only admire, but I'm teaching in this course. Taylor's work is the spine. If you don't appreciate this body of songwriting and performance, that's not my problem. But they should remember literally everything that takes up a lot of time in modern English department was at one point a low prestige popular art form that you wouldn't bother to study.
Yes, it's exactly that, isn't it? Like, Taylor Swift is a huge cultural force today, and it's very easy to be sniffy about it. And I have to admit, I mean, I don't know much of her music. I think you know her music better than I do.
I listen to Taylor Swift all the time now on my bike, actually.
Have you had any accidents? Any accidents no, while I listening did, to Taylor I, Swift?
Well, no, I do it with bone conductor headphones, as you know. But I need to kind of work out the different eras. I'm not quite on top of the different eras.
What's the current favourite?
I don't really know. I just sort of...
You listen to it as if it was a symphony.
I do, yes, exactly. That's the right way to put it. Mm. It's just an easy thing to listen to when I'm riding my bike and wanting not to... you know, sometimes you have information overload. Do you know what I mean?
I know, but you do sound like one of those politicians who says, oh, I'm a real Taylor Swift fan. And then you say, name a song, and then you can't.
Don't be horrible.
What's your favourite song? Oh, I don't know the names of any of the songs.
Well, there's Cruel Summer, Antihero. I mean, there's lots that I like. There's this great song that she's got, which I'm going to find now, which is about if she was a man, how all her relationships would have been differently analysed. It's called The Man. If she was a man, they'd be saying she'd be, you know, she was playing the field and it was all fine. And then, but actually there's been a whole bunch of misogyny.
Held
to different standards. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, I'm learning my Taylor Swift.
Great. Would you like to go to the cinema to see that concert film?
I am quite keen to go and see it, actually.
It's still on, is it?
I think so. Or presumably you could watch it at home.
I don't know why I just asked you that, like, you have an encyclopedic knowledge of everything that's on at the cinema.
Taylor Swift. Time.
I really want to go see that Wonka film.
Actually, Justine was saying to me she wants to go and see the Wonka film.
Well, it's written by the Paddington guy, or directed by the Paddington guy, so it's going
to
be...
I told you, didn't I, that when my kids were small, I took them to the Paddington one, and it was a trauma.
Yes, yeah.
The hypodermic needle.
Yes.
Have you seen the other two Doctor Who's or not?
Yeah, I'm all up to date with Doctor Who.
I'm not up to date because of the UAE.
Oh, well, you're in for a treat. Why don't you go and do that now after you finish trimming your Christmas
Righty-tighty.
Tree?
Righty-tighty. I think we're sort of at the end of this conversation, aren't we?
I know. You just want to go decorate your Christmas tree, don't you?
I'm going to go cold water swimming, actually.
What, and you're going to leave your family to decorate the tree?
I did my bit by carrying the tree. I haven't been for 2 weeks.
Oh, well, you'd better
I'm slightly worried.
Better go and take the plunge.
Literally.
All right. Well, we'll chat through next week.
Good to talk. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, see you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural materials, like leather made from plants, eucalyptus tree fiber, and sugarcane. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're super natural. Find your perfect pair at allbirds.com today. That's ALLBIRDS.com.